Today is Friday, November 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. 3 days after the general election, Americans are still waiting to learn who their president will be.
The Trump campaign is laying the groundwork to challenge the result, launching dozens of lawsuits involving vote counting.
Plus, races in Congress are close.
Control of the United States Senate could be decided here in Georgia.
The election and social media.
An online battle has been taking place on Twitter, Facebook, and sites like LinkedIn.
And Greece faces new challenges. We'll have these stories and more next. U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign is intensifying legal actions to challenge the integrity of the ballot counting process in several battleground states as Democratic nominee Joe Biden inches closer to securing 270 electoral votes to win the Oval Office. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wita-Kuswara starts us off.
Dueling protests and accusations about vote counting in Philadelphia in the battleground state of Pennsylvania.
I've seen the pictures on TV of people counting the ballots in the Philly polling places, actually wearing Biden face masks and Biden T-shirts.
When you say there's an arbitrary time to stop counting votes, you know, that's disenfranchisement.
Democratic nominee Joe Biden, much closer than President Donald Trump to reaching 270 electoral votes to secure victory, projected confidence and called for calm.
Democracy is sometimes messy. It sometimes requires a little patience as well. But that patience has been rewarded now for more than 240 years with a system of governance that's been the envy of the world.
Meanwhile, Trump, without evidence, accused Democrats of voter fraud and suppression and trying to steal the election.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
As ballots continue to be tallied, there has been scant evidence of fraud. Still, the Trump campaign is laying the groundwork to challenge the result, launching dozens of lawsuits involving vote counting in key states including Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Steve Mulroy is the author of the book Rethinking U.S. Election Law.
I think they will do that in all the states where the margin of victory is close in the hope that some of them might eventually get to the U.S. Supreme Court, where I think they legitimately think they have a more sympathetic audience with the 6-3 conservative majority.
In Nevada, the Trump campaign sued, claiming without evidence that thousands of non-residents cast ballots. Richard Grinnell from the Trump campaign.
They continue to count illegal votes. That is unacceptable.
The Trump campaign won a lawsuit to ensure representatives can better observe vote counting in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. A similar Stop the Count lawsuit in Michigan was dismissed. Another lawsuit in Georgia accusing election officials of improperly intermingling ineligible ballots with valid ones was also thrown out. The Biden campaign called the barrage of lawsuits a flailing strategy. Campaign manager Jen O'Malley Dillon.
They are meritless and nothing more than an attempt to distract and delay what is now inevitable. Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States.
All eyes are now on Pennsylvania and Georgia. Trump must win both states to secure the presidency, while Biden can win without either state if he holds onto his slim leads in Arizona and Nevada. Patsy Wita-Kuswara, VOA News, Washington.
VOA's top of the hour newscasts have the latest election news. You can listen on your VOA local affiliate or on our website, voanews.com. Now, the balance of power in the U.S. Congress will come down to just a few close races across the nation where votes are still being counted. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the race to control the U.S. Senate could stretch into next year.
Control of the United States Senate could be decided here in Georgia as volunteers count ballots where the margin between Republican Senator David Perdue and Democratic challenger John Ossoff is incredibly close. Democratic Senate candidate John Ossoff.
It's not just that you're a crook, Senator.
Republicans went into Election Day with a 53-47 majority in the U.S. Senate. To win control, Democrats need to gain 3 seats if Joe Biden becomes president and 4 seats if Donald Trump is reelected. John Aldrich, Duke University.
If Biden is elected, he is known as someone who has worked across the aisle throughout his career. And if the Democrats have a narrower base in the House, they are going to be looking for allies. So there is some chance under a Democratic administration with divided control that there would be some sort of bipartisanship.
Election day success for Democrats in Arizona, where Mark Kelly beat Republican Martha McSally, and in Colorado, where former Governor John Hinkenlooper won his Senate race. But Republicans picked up a Senate seat in Alabama and held on to seats in several close races, including contests in Iowa, Maine, and South Carolina, where President Trump's close ally, Senator Lindsey Graham, beat a well-funded Democratic challenge. Whether it's Trump or Biden occupying the White House, control of the U.S. Senate will determine what work gets done in Washington for the next 2 years. Democrats had also hoped to add to their majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
But I'm here just to sing the praises of our House Democrats and our candidates.
But House Democrats did not make as many gains as projected. Still, they will keep their majority. Michelle Swerz, Georgetown University.
It really hinges on who wins the presidential race, some of this, because President Trump and Nancy Pelosi haven't even seen each other really for a year. There's a lot of bad blood between the two of them. So I think it would be very difficult for President Trump to get a new legislative platform through the Congress.
The final makeup of the U.S. Senate will not be known until January. That's when the other Georgia Senate race between Republican Kelly Loeffler and Democratic challenger Raphael Warnock goes into a runoff election. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Sounds like y'all ready for victory.
Yeah! With election-related emotions running high in the U.S., Twitter, Facebook, and other internet firms are trying different ways to address misinformation on their sites. Michelle Quinn takes things from here.
As the United States grapples with the results of Election Day, an online battle has been taking place on Twitter, Facebook, and sites like LinkedIn over information, some say misinformation, about the election and its results. There are a lot of stories out there. Fadi Karan is the campaign director of Avaaz, a nonprofit activism group that tracks misinformation campaigns.
False claims about voter fraud. We're seeing a lot of, just a flood of such claims. Calls to violence or calls to protests or calls to speak, you know, fight conspiracies that are just not real. And that is dangerous. It's a democratic emergency. And we're terrified about these false claims further polarizing the American people and leading to a collapse in trust in our institutions.
Twitter is trying to stop the spread of misinformation by labeling some tweets and preventing their ability to spread. Facebook is labeling posts and pointing users to its election site. On Thursday, it removed a Stop the Steal group used to organize protests against vote counting. Google-owned YouTube is posting a label on some videos, but leaving up some, making claims that appear to violate its policy. Misinformation about the vote count is also being posted in Spanish on Twitter and Facebook. One Spanish language theme was that President Donald Trump is being robando, or robbed, of a win in the election. These steps signal a new willingness by internet firms to step into the maelstrom of facts and misinformation, even when prominent people are speaking. Efforts like these are crucial for citizens to trust the final election results, according to experts. Teresa Payton is a former White House chief information officer.
The more we can tamp down these disinformation and misinformation campaigns hitting Americans so that we can believe that the system is actually working for us. Because at the end of the day, we're the ones who own the system. We're a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And so we deserve some level of transparency here.
Despite these steps, some feel internet firms should be doing more, such as retroactive corrections. Fadi Karan.
For everyone who has liked or engaged or seen the piece of misinformation before Facebook puts a label on it, they should send them a correction saying, sorry, we have, through our fact checkers, detected that this is false.
One thing is clear. As Americans await final results, the internet sites will continue to be ripe ecosystems for real and fake information. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
As people wait to see who will win the U.S. presidential election, politicians and analysts in France discuss the ongoing process and outcome of the vote and its possible impact on the relationship between the two countries. For VOA, Nicolas Pinault has more.
The U.S. election is all over the news in France. And since Tuesday, the French media have been covering the vote extensively. The uncertainty around the outcome is widely commented on, especially since final results were still pending more than 24 hours after polling stations closed. Jean-Claude Beaujou is a lawyer and vice president of France Amérique, an association which promotes friendship between France and the United States.
On ne comprend pas en France spontanément qu'il y ait 50 législations.
Beaujou says that people in France have a hard time understanding that in the United States, each of the 50 states has different legislation to organize the vote. In addition, he says, the United States is seen as the country of Google, Silicon Valley, etc., with a technological edge, and it is hard to believe that they do not have a better and faster way of processing the results to know who won. After 4 years of a tumultuous relationship between U.S. President Donald Trump and Francis Emmanuel Macron, officials in Paris say that regardless of who is sworn in as the next U.S. president, a fresh start is needed for both countries. Jean-Yves Le Drian is France's foreign minister.
Le choix d'un président revient aux Américains. Il faudra ensuite que nous travaillions.
Le Drian says it is up to the American people to decide who will be president and that France will work with whoever is elected and the new administration in Washington. He stresses that Europe has been reaffirming its sovereignty over the past 4 years and that there will be no going back to the previous situation. Therefore, he says, a new transatlantic relationship must be built based on a new partnership. As of Thursday, President Emmanuel Macron had not commented on the outcome. Nicolas Pinault, Paris.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two new studies in the journal Nature detail the discovery of not only the first ever fast radio burst generated in the Milky Way, but also the possible source of this relatively new astronomical phenomenon. Canada's Chime Fast Radio Burst collaboration analyzed data gathered by its radio telescope array and detected a fast radio burst on April 20th, 2020. This prompted a team from Caltech to sift through data gathered by its STEAR-2 radio receivers, where they also detected the same fast radio burst. The two teams found evidence that this rare and elusive event was produced in the Milky Way from a type of neutron star known as a magnetar. Up until now, all detected fast radio bursts were found to be generated in other and often distant galaxies. A magnetar is a special type of neutron star that has an incredibly powerful magnetic field. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Greece has ordered a three-week nationwide lockdown to help contain a dramatic resurgence of COVID-19 infections. It's the second shutdown this year after a sudden surge in infections this week. Anthony Karasava reports the once COVID-19-free country may have fallen a victim of its own success.
Under restrictions taking effect Saturday, retail businesses will be closed, except for supermarkets, pharmacies, and banks. Greeks will need state-authorized permits to venture out of their homes at specific times. While primary schools will remain open, high schools and universities will be closed, operating by way of online learning sessions. In a nationally televised news conference, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said he had no other option than to take aggressive action because the deadly virus was spreading at an alarming rate.
Κάτι άλλαξε δραματικά αυτήν την εβδομάδα. Το είδαμε πρώτα απ' όλα στη Θεσσαλονίκη.
It changed dramatically this week, he said. We saw the contagion rates increasing at a frightening rate in northern Greece, and we saw similar trends emerging. If these measures were not taken now, he said, then the strain on the healthcare system would become so great within a few weeks that doctors would have to limit admissions to intensive care units. In the last 5 days alone, the country has counted 10,000 infections, a fifth of the total number of cases documented since the start of the pandemic here. Greece's rolling average of daily new cases is just 17 per 100,000 people, compared to 33 in Britain and 68 in France. Mitsotakis warned, though, that Greece had less of a margin to respond. Just out of a 10-year devastating financial crisis, Greece took aggressive action at the start of the pandemic to bolster its anemic healthcare system, adding much-needed personnel and medical supplies to deal with the health crisis. It managed to keep infections down to about a few dozen a day, with a death toll of around 300. Once summer set in and its borders reopened, though, Greeks abandoned all show of social distancing, packing into bars and partying non-stop. The social rebellion was so intense that even a movement of deniers mushroomed across the country, refusing to don masks, let alone acknowledge the existence of the deadly virus. Now Mitsotakis is under fire by politicians across the board, accusing him of mismanaging the health crisis. On Thursday, he seemed apologetic. Perhaps the gravest mistake we made, he said, was that we resigned to the sweeping sense of relief that gripped all of us over the summer that the pandemic was over and that we had been spared. Government officials anticipate the draconian lockdown will stem the spread of the deadly bug in as soon as a week. Medical experts, though, expect the Greek resurgence to worsen before it will start to recede. And that could be well beyond Christmas and into the new year, when vaccines are anticipated for release. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
At least 57 people in Central America have died since Hurricane Ida came ashore in Nicaragua Tuesday, causing floods and landslides across the region. Ida has been downgraded to a tropical depression, but lingering rains created more flooding from Panama to Guatemala. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Ida is forecast to regain tropical storm strength as it moves into the Caribbean Sea on a northerly path toward Cuba and southern Florida. Ethiopia's prime minister is defending military operations against the country's well-armed Tigray region, asserting that months of patiently trying to resolve differences have failed. Abiy Ahmed's government is mobilizing troops from around the country after 2 days of clashes between government forces and a powerful ethnic faction that led the country's ruling coalition for decades. Communications in the region are cut off, and it remains challenging to verify events. Some in the international community urgently call for dialogue as one of Africa's most powerful and populous countries nears civil war. German police said Friday that they were conducting searches in several towns in connection with four people believed to have ties to the man suspected of killing four people in Vienna when he opened fire in the city center. Authorities in Austria have identified the attacker as a 20-year-old dual national of Austria and North Macedonia who had a previous connection for trying to join the Islamic State group in Syria. Austria has closed a mosque the attacker frequented, and local media reports the interior and integration ministers have ordered the closures of, quote, radical mosques. Researchers in Australia say a jelly-like sea sponge found along the Great Barrier Reef could provide clues about an elusive part of the human DNA. Phil Mercer reports the researchers' new study, which looks at 700 million years of evolution, concludes that elements of the human genome work in the same way as the genome of the prehistoric sea sponge.
Researchers at the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute in Sydney say that while the DNA of humans and these simple yet highly adaptable aquatic invertebrates are not similar, they do share a comparable set of instructions that control how information contained in a gene is decoded and used. The scientists believe these genetic links have been preserved across millions of years of evolution. Lead researcher Emily Wong says the new study has allowed them to better read and understand how our genetic library works.
We focused on sequences in the genome called enhancers, and they're responsible for switching on and off genes. We found that similar sequences are deeply conserved all the way from humans to sea sponges. So that's over 700 million years of evolution. We're really excited about this discovery because it's the first time that such a deeply conserved enhancer has been discovered.
Long before the dinosaurs, the sea sponge was one of the species that dominated life on Earth. The researchers believe that it's not only people that share a genetic link to sea sponges, but most likely the entire animal kingdom. The study could have implications for biomedical advances and healthcare. A senior researcher said the more we know about how our genes are wired, the better we're able to develop new treatments for diseases. The academic work was a collaboration between various Australian universities and research organisations and has been published in the journal Science. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. For the latest U.S. election news, listen to our hourly newscasts on your local VOA affiliate. Plus, for in-depth coverage of world events and other news, visit voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to bringing to justice individuals around the world who are guilty of mass atrocities. One program established to help accomplish this goal is the War Crimes Rewards Program. It offers rewards of up to $5 million for information that leads to the arrest, transfer, or conviction of certain individuals wanted for war crimes, genocide, or crimes against humanity by international, hybrid, or mixed tribunals. The program is run by the U.S. State Department's Office of Global Criminal Justice, which is headed by Ambassador-at-Large for Global Criminal Justice, Morse Tan. In an interview, Ambassador Tan said that currently the War Crimes Rewards Program, or WCRP, is focused on the six individuals still at large and wanted by the International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals for their roles in the genocide that killed at least 800,000 men, women, and children in Rwanda in 1994. In May 2020, as Ambassador Tan noted, one of those designated war criminals listed by the WCRP was caught.
Felician Kabuga, who was the chief financier and arguably one of the biggest inciters of the Rwandan genocide, was apprehended in a suburb outside of Paris. It had been over 26 years that he was at large, and he was at the top of our list in terms of those who were on this, named in this War Crimes Rewards Program. So it was a major step that he was apprehended.
The remaining six Rwandans still on the War Crimes Rewards Program list and wanted by the International Mechanism for their roles in the genocide are Proteus Impiranya, Fulgence Kayishima, Alois Ndimbati, Phineas Munyarugarama, Charles Sikababwo, and Ryan Dekayo. Anyone who has information on these individuals can confidentially contact the program by emailing wcrp@state.gov or sending a WhatsApp or text message to +1 202 975 5468. Ambassador Tan said it is crucial that there be no impunity for the atrocities committed by such people.
And that's for its own sake, to satisfy justice, but it also has a preventative role in terms of prevention of these sorts of mass crimes.
Accountability, Ambassador Tan declared, is the single best way to prevent such gross injustices from happening again in the future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.